tosses up. Van Hula, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the west side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three. No, it's good.
She got it.
Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
We may be in normal, but this isn't your normal sports talk show. This is the Red Zone, live from the campus of Illinois State University. Good evening, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us. I'm Anthony Ferretti, joined alongside my other two musketeers and co-hosts for this evening, Joey Dwyer and Scott Rosala. How are we doing, guys?
I'm doing pretty good. I don't know about you guys, but I'm ready for the show today.
It's been a long, long day. So I'm ready. I've been looking forward to it all day. Got to go home. I had one of my classes. Usually I go class all day until we come to the show, but I had one of them canceled, so I got to go home,
oh,
take a little
nice
nap.
Yeah.
But it's no. See, I played myself because I thought it was going to be nice, and I woke up at 1:40 getting ready for my 2 o'clock class, and I like could not get out of bed. It took me 10 minutes. I had to run through the snow. It was awful.
You know what always throws me off is having that long weekend. Because not having class on Monday.
Yeah, I'm okay day, yeah.
Just, it has me like, I don't know, it has me all thrown off for the entire week, I feel like it's Wednesday.
I only have Tuesday, Thursday classes, so every weekend for me is a 4-day weekend. And so I always feel like I'm just out of sorts all the time. Like I'm always super stressed for 2 days, yeah. And then I'm just relaxed. And I don't think my body is quite adjusted yet.
How many credit hours are you doing?
15. So like my days are packed.
Okay.
My days are packed Tuesday, Thursday.
Okay.
But yeah, my Tuesdays are packed. When we have that one comm class, I'm going like 3:30 to basically 8 because I'm a Spanish minor and I have to take a Spanish class 3:30 to 5 and then go to LaMonica's class.
Yeah, Freddie and I got Tom LaMonica 5 to 8.
Really?
Or no, yeah,
5:50, so basically a 3-hour class.
Yeah, but it's a great class.
It's super fun.
Sports media, so.
It's not a bad class at all. I'm taking a sports broadcasting class from Monday nights from 5 to like 8:20.
Yeah. 2:57, right?
And that's your second semester in a row Monday night classes.
So it is.
That's garbage.
And it's not because I'm trying to get out of the meeting. So if anybody's listening to us or our advisors, it's not because I'm getting out of the meeting. I'm ready to talk a little sports.
Yeah, I'm excited. Best part of the week, baby.
I'm excited as well. We do have a great show planned for you. We're going to talk some women's basketball, and we got three up, three down. But first off, we're going to have our first interview of the semester with Redbird soccer player Kate Delfava. We're going to talk to her when we come back. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Red Zone here on the pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Got a hot take? Join the discussion on Twitter by tweeting at WZND with the hashtag RedZone. It's the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Welcome back to the Red Zone, and we are joined tonight by an athlete with way too many accomplishments to name. Welcome back to the show, NWSL 12th overall pick, Kate Delfava. Kate, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you guys so much for having me again. I'm grateful you guys welcomed me back.
Of course.
Yeah, a lot has happened since we had you on in early September, and just to talk about that a little bit, the ISU soccer team, you had quite the season.
Yeah.
Very fun to watch. Looking back on that, what are some things that stand out to you that made that run so good up until the championship game?
Yeah, I think it was all the girls doing. We had a great defensive line, and the defensive presence of our team this year was something we really wanted to focus on, and I think we had a run where we had like 5 or 6 shutouts in a row. So it's pretty hard to lose when you have no one scoring on you. So just moments like that, things we focused on in the off season that really came to light in the season. It was really great to see, and the girls made it memorable. So
looking back on it, what are some of the main things that you think the most memorable moments in like your career here, whether it's with soccer or even just at ISU, that you mm-hmm. kind of stick out to you and that you're going to miss the most leaving?
Yeah, I think definitely the memories with the team. I can remember specifically my freshman year against Michigan in the first round of the NCAA tournament, went to penalty kicks, and we won on the 5th penalty kick, and just storming the field with my teammates and just that feeling of accomplishing something that no one really thought you were going to do. No one thought we were going to win that game. And then, yeah, just moments with my team, with my senior class. The MVC semifinal stands out to me, where we won in overtime and got to rush the field again. So just little moments like that with my team that I'll never forget.
And so now we're moving forward past ISU. For those of you, for our listeners who don't know, you were drafted 12th overall into the National Women's Soccer League, the highest out of anyone ever in the Missouri Valley Conference. Can you just walk us through draft day? Obviously, yeah. None of us in here are professional athletes, so we wouldn't have the experience. So yeah. Just what was going through your head? What kind of happened that day?
Yeah, it was a long morning. The draft started at, I think, 10 a.m., and I couldn't really sleep the night before. I was nervous, but long morning. But then when the draft finally started, I talked to my family before, and I was kind of just like, you know, whatever happens, happens. It's meant to be for a reason. And so the first round went by, and I was just kind of still watching the TV, but I wasn't really expecting to go in the first or second round. I mean, no one had me projected there. I didn't know much about the projections, but I believed the people that were saying that. So so I was actually going to turn the draft off after the first round, because I wanted to get a quick workout in, just like a quick cardio thing, and come back, because the first round took like an hour and a half.
Yeah, I was watching.
Yeah.
I was watching
they're on pick number 6, which they take their time for a reason, but they were on pick number 6. It was an hour had gone by, and so I was like, wow, I'll probably just come back in an hour or so when I'll get picked. And then I was thinking that, and then like 3 minutes later, my name popped up on the screen, and my phone started blowing up. My parents called me, and it was a moment I'll never forget, for sure.
I think you kind of answered my question here, but I'm going to ask something similar to it. So you had no general idea where you were going to go? Like, none of these teams were reaching out to you and talking to you beforehand?
Yeah, no. I'm not sure. Yeah, no, I didn't know for sure, certain. I had known that the Utah Royals and my head coach had discussed previously about me as a player, but their head coach actually left in December. So okay. They have an interim head coach, the assistant coach right now, who's actually the person who called me and contacted me, and he was super excited, and he was great. But so, yeah, I wasn't certain. I had no idea, and I didn't even know that I was going to be picked until after the pick actually happened. So
and,
it was cool.
And you mentioned that the coach called you. Mm-hmm. Have you been in contact with anybody else on the team thus far?
Yeah. Well, not direct contact yet. The new draftees, the two other girls that got drafted to the Royals, we like followed each other on Instagram and all that stuff. But besides that, I've been in contact with like team admin and communication staff. But I'm excited to go out and meet the girls though, and I love the aspect of a team, and I think I'm gonna love all those girls. So I'm really excited.
Have you ever been to Utah before?
No. No. Have it. So if anyone has any tips for living in Utah, I'd appreciate
it. Have you been like searching it? Like after you got drafted, you like looking at places,
yeah,
the area you're going to be in?
Kinda. I like looked because the stadium is in Sandy, Utah. So okay. The team's technically Salt Lake, the Utah Royals, but the stadium's in Sandy. So that's just like a couple minutes outside of Salt Lake. It's a suburb. So, but all I've heard is that it's really gorgeous. Great people, great community, and the Utah Royals fans have been so, so welcoming already. It's crazy how much they already support me, so I'm really excited to just get out there and meet all them.
What is your time frame looking like in terms of reporting? Mm-hmm. And then obviously the season starts mid-April-ish.
Yeah.
So when do you have to actually be out there and be there to train?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's going to be March when I'm really getting out there and starting to settle in, and we're going to start training as a team. And then, April is when preseason games start. So just around that time frame, early March.
And we talked about it when you first came in, too, and you kind of brought up having the new players as well. Mm-hmm. Do you kind of have a general idea of who you're going to live with and, like, where you're going to live down there?
Yeah, they asked if I had any, like, requests for a roommate, and I was like, well, I don't know anyone, but I'm not that picky. I'm pretty flexible. I was like, put me anywhere. I'll sleep anywhere. So, I think I'm assuming she said that something about putting all us newbies together so that we can acclimate together and kind of figure it out as we go. So I have a good idea that I'll probably be with.
I was going to bring that up too. Like, because where are you? Like, where's your hometown? Your hometown's from Illinois, right?
No, in Wisconsin actually.
In Wisconsin.
Kenosha, right?
Yeah. Okay. Kenosha, Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. It's right over the border, like 40 minutes from downtown Chicago.
So is this move for you going all the way out there? Is it a little nerve wracking for you, or
yeah.
is it something that you think you can adjust to right away?
It's definitely nerve-wracking, but I think I'm way more excited than I am
nervous
at this point. It's such a great opportunity, and yeah, I think that I'm going to learn a lot. No matter what happens, I'm going to grow as a person, so I don't really see any downfalls to it at this time.
And obviously, there are a lot of players in the NWSL who are also players on the national team.
Yeah.
What is it going to mean? There are a couple on Utah Christian Press, just to name one. What's it going to mean to kind of be under their mentorship as a young woman in the league and to play with some greats who we've seen have international success in the past 8 years?
I mean, you can't really ask for a better training environment or a better mentors to have. So I'm so excited to get out there and learn. I'm sure they have so much knowledge to give to me. The coaches out there are great. I'm so excited to learn because I love soccer, but I know that I'm nowhere near close to knowing everything about soccer, so I'm really excited.
And with all the icons, like the female athlete soccer players that are in this league, like the Alex Morgans and you know, players like that, who are you most excited to play against?
Play against, wow. I just think some of the great defenders, like Becky Sauerbrunn, is on my team. So every day in training, I'm going to be going up against someone that's played over a decade on the national team. So I just think players like that just know so much, and even just like, I'll be going against her in training, which is just crazy to think about. So I'm just really excited to play against all of the great players in that league, and I'm so excited.
This was a question we were kind of asking. Are you going to be able to keep the number 8?
I was looking at the Royals website, and there's a big clearance sale on jerseys right now.
Yeah.
And you can get a personalized jersey. It's like $50.
Okay.
And I was thinking, like, there are a bunch of people back here who would love to be rocking the Del Fava jersey.
Yeah.
And but we need to know because I can't get an 8 jersey.
Yes.
And then it turns out you're like 22.
Uh-huh.
And then I look like a fool, you know?
Yeah. I'm going to take any number they throw at me. I have been 8 my entire life.
Really?
But number on the back doesn't mean much. So I'm just going to take whatever number they give me. Hopefully, I just want a number. I just want to be on the field. So I will let you guys know as soon as I know my number. And so you guys can get those jerseys.
I appreciate
that. If you want to get those, I don't know.
Do you have, I mean, with all this, I feel like with you, like anything you do, you can accomplish. You've been doing so much here at Illinois State, and now you're playing professional. Do you have maybe, within the next 3-4 years, like World Cup aspirations or things like that?
I mean, anything is possible at this point, and I'm just going to push myself to keep getting better, and hopefully if my ceiling's high enough, I'd love for an opportunity like that, even just like a call up to a camp or anything to just show my abilities. But I think this is a good step in that direction, and even if that never happens, I'm pretty happy with where I'm at right now, but can't wait to keep going and strive for new things.
We are going to be rooting for you heavily back here. If Utah comes to place the Red Stars,
they definitely will.
We'll drive up and catch a game for sure. But Kate, thank you so much for joining us again. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about some ISU women's basketball. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 103.3 WZND, the Pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Illinois State infielder Owen Miller, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone. We just got done interviewing Kate Tapalva, or I should say my co-host got done, Joey and Scott, and that was a very exciting interview. I feel like she had a lot to say, and the quote that really stuck out to me was she was saying the number on the back doesn't mean anything for her as long as she just gets to be on the field and compete and play the sport she loves.
Oh yeah, and that's gotta just be so cool. Like, Can you imagine getting drafted into a professional sports league? Like, it blows my mind.
I think it would be just the fact that you see your name next to, like, let's say, like, I was going into, like, the NFL or something. I'm sitting here watching the draft, and I see, like, Chicago Bears, Scott Rizzo, like, you know, like, seventh round, you know, last pick overall. But, like, I don't know. Like,
what do they call that guy? The last pick.
The last pick. Mr. Irrelevant?
Mr. Irrelevant, yes.
Oh, they actually have a name for it.
Yeah.
And they get a jersey.
All I'm saying is Scott is Mr. Irrelevant. That is the most accurate thing I've ever heard.
Oh, man. No, I think it's awesome, and I wish her the best of luck. That was her second interview here with us, and she killed it. I loved it, so... we're going to talk a little ISU women's basketball. So how about we open that up? That's always something fun to talk about because they're actually doing pretty well this year.
They are. It's way more fun than men's basketball.
Yeah, I was going to say, other than the men's team. I was at the game last night. Yeah, wasn't looking too hot. Coach was really disappointed. He's like, we might just have to get back to basics. And that's kind of disappointing if you're a Redbird fan to hear that. But, yeah, let's talk about women's basketball. We talked about men's basketball last week. Women's basketball, they are on a roll. They got some really good players. Lexi Wallen is just lighting up for this women's team. She's a fifth-year senior grad student, and she's just averaging like 20 points a game. She's just amazing.
And what a story. Then Ferretti, since we've been here, Lexi Wallen, we came in, and we started doing games.
Volleyball.
And we called volleyball, and that was Lexi Wallen. And then last year, we saw that transition into basketball. And I remember seeing her name on the roster at the beginning of the season, and I was so confused. I was like, is there another Lexi Wallen? But she's come onto this team, and they are really running it through her right now. Her and TT Madgett, they are a force in the Missouri Valley this year, and it is so fun to watch.
Yeah, I think so. And with head coach Kristen Gillespie, I really think she's been able to turn this program around because before we came in, they were struggling a little bit, so they wanted to get rid of their head coach and see what's going on. I think bringing in Coach Gillespie is pretty nice because she played at NC State under legendary head coach Kay Yao, went to the Final Four with them as well, was one of the studs on their team. So really nice to bring her in with experience, try and get them back to the postseason where they belong. And just every year since she's been here, they've just been building up. And I think this is the year that they could go further, maybe potentially get a postseason berth.
Well, they're sitting in a very good spot, and you guys brought up some good points. They're sitting at 11-5. And obviously they've had a couple of crucial losses during this season that I'm sure they wish they could get back. But, you know, they take on Drake. They have Northern Iowa coming up their next two games. I think those are some bounce-back wins after taking that loss to Loyola 69-64. I don't think they're going to get an at-large, but I think if they can carry some momentum, get some big wins here late in the season, that's just going to help their momentum when it comes to tournament time.
Exactly. Like against Missouri State, I think the Lady Bears are like 19th in the nation. So in the past, it was the Drake Bulldogs that were kind of running the table in the Valley. They were like mid-20s in the rankings. They were always like 24, 25. But now it's the Missouri State Lady Bears that have really been pulling it together, even under a new coach, because head coach Kelly Harper, she went back to her alma mater, Tennessee, and has been coaching their team. And we've seen what she's been able to do. But I think if they can beat the Lady Bears, they are definitely going to make a statement in the Valley.
And Ferretti, you're absolutely right about Drake. We saw them last year when we were doing Hoops in the Heartland, and they looked unstoppable, but that's the Lady Bears this year. I think that Illinois State, there are a couple parts of their game that need to be cleaned up a little bit. They're not great from three, and sometimes their offensive production through the middle lacks a little bit, but they are one of the best defensive teams in the Valley this year, and defense wins championships. So I think if they can clean up a couple of the trouble spots they've got on offense, they're going to be a real contender coming March.
You're talking about shooting three-pointers. So I guess on their day off, MLK Day, head coach Kristen Gillespie got a Snapchat from someone on their team that Mary Crompton was in the gym. She was shooting a bunch of threes. And according to what she posted on Twitter, she went 338 for 331 for three-pointers. She shot nearly 400 three-pointers and shot, that's 88.7% from three-point range just in practice on her day off. So I think that's amazing. And she was one of the people I was kind of excited about trying to see what she can do from deep down.
It sounds like they're trying to fix those problems. And that's always so fun to see when you've got a team that is committed and they are in it for the team. And that just means so much more to the fan base, seeing that and being like, we support you, and you are using that to fuel, and it's just this team is so exciting.
And I think it comes from their past success that they've had here in the most recent years. And we've talked about it time and time again. They have a very exciting team. And these girls come out every single game and they play to the Gillespie, how would you word it, the chemistry or like the
The Gillespie, like, gameplay, kind of like the her style.
She brought her own style to Illinois State, and I think from her doing that, it's been just uphill from there, and she's bringing a lot of Redbird faithful, and I think it's awesome to see.
I'm just, and if we look ahead now, I know we touched on it, they've got Drake and Northern Iowa. That February 2nd game, they head down to Springfield to take on Missouri State. I think that'll be the make or break, because after that game, they've got a 3-game homestand. So if they can come out of there with a win, and then they've got Pack the Arena at Bradley, that's going to be huge if they want a chance to go in with a top-3 seed in the Valley.
So we will have to see what happens. That'll be an interesting game. But first off, we do have two home games this week, and that Z&D will be calling. They're going to take on the Drake Bulldogs tomorrow at 7. We got live coverage beginning at 6:50, and then they're going to take on UNI on Sunday. And then we got our poll question of the week. Last week's question was, who's going to score the most? Without a doubt, it was Zach Copeland, 71.4%. But this week's poll question is, how are the Redbirds going to do this weekend at home? So make sure to go to @WZNDSports on Twitter so you can vote. And it's pretty simple. Are they going to go 2-0? Are they going to go 0-2, or are they going to go 1-1, beating Drake and not UNI, or beating UNI but not Drake? We'll have to see what happens. But I think with that, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to have it'll be the bottom of the hour, so we'll have the newscast, bring Nick and Paro on. You're listening to the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. Thank you so much for that wonderful newscast, Nick, and thanks for being on the show. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you, man?
Doing pretty good. Thanks again for coming on. So tell the listeners at home what you want to talk about this week.
So we're going to talk some NHL and some Blackhawks hockey. We're going to talk about a hot Blackhawks team that is 5 of 6 going in the All-Star break. They've started to look good.
So come in, so you're talking about the Blackhawks. I love talking Blackhawks. You always come in here, talk about it. We've had first semester, we've gone kind of back and forth with some heated arguments. I think we were talking about Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews. I said, let's get rid of him and move on. And you're like, absolutely not. We're going to build the statue.
Yeah, you know, I think this segment may be a little different between me and you, Scott. I think we may... I think we will agree on more things this time, because a lot of the things that's going on right now are, they are playing good hockey. It doesn't take a hockey expert to know that. They were very close to taking that 6-game win streak into the All-Star break. Unfortunately, Joel Klenvall and the Panthers had something to say about that. But it was a good hockey game. And, you know, if that game would have been in October or November, they wouldn't have came back to make it a game at 4-3. I think they would have lost 4-1 or 5-1 or whatever. But that's the team that they have right now. They've been playing better where, you know, they go down 4-1 and they still have a chance to come back. And we saw it. Obviously, the comeback came a little short, but it was still a good hockey game. They came up just short at 4-3. But like I said, winners of 5 of 6, and like I said, the last 10 or 15 games, they look like a really quality hockey team.
Yeah, I definitely think that they have, and you mentioned it at the beginning of the season, kind of they were struggling a little bit, really didn't find their niche. Things weren't really going offensively. We were going in between Crow and Leonard, and I think we still are, to try and see who's going to be that starting goalie. But you mentioned it now, they were more capable of coming back. It was just that second period kind of dug them a big hole that they couldn't get out of. Especially with Kane having 1,000 points, and I think with Coach Key coming back too.
Yeah, absolutely, Evan. It's funny, me and Scott sat here first semester, fall semester, and I made a statement that Scott didn't agree with too much. I had said that the Chicago Blackhawks have the best goaltending tandem in the league. Scott didn't agree with me. Scott, let me ask you now. Maybe you necessarily don't still agree, but do you believe that a little bit more now?
I believe I have a change of heart.
Okay.
Nowhere near what you said. We are not the best defending core in the NHL.
I didn't say defending core.
You said the best goaltending.
The best goaltending.
No chance. The best is, in the NHL.
Robin Leonard is probably a top 2 goaltender in this league right now.
In the NHL.
Absolutely.
Robert Leonard.
Ooh, absolutely. He is not a backup goaltender.
He was a backup goaltender until this year, and he's still
no.
He was not.
Yes, he was. He was not a backup goaltender last year.
He split time before he came here.
No, he did not.
I need you to go look it up.
He was the Islanders' starting goalie last year.
Did he win Rookie of the Year too?
No, he won.
He was a
finalist for the Vezina Trophy. That's what the league's best goaltender. He is a top three goaltender in this league.
No, absolutely not.
Who?
Because he's not a veteran goaltender.
That means nothing.
Doesn't mean anything, but he's not proven yet. So the thing
he's
is,
absolutely proven. He's going to get a $7-8 million deal.
Because he's had one or two good years. I mean, look at how many athletes have had one or two good years, and they turned out to be complete bust. Mitch Trubisky went 12-4 last season.
Oh, let's not put Mitch Trubisky in this
conversation. And went to a Pro Bowl. So let's not talk about one guy having, you know, one or two good seasons.
Scott,
but he's splitting time here on the Blackhawks.
Scott, but they're not doing the split so much these days.
It's not solidified yet. It's not.
What's not solidified?
He is not the solidified starter as of right now, as of today's date.
Because you still have Corey Crawford, who can play, still produce, and still can play well.
I wouldn't say he can play well, but he can produce sometimes.
So you're going to sit here and say Crawford hasn't been good this year?
He hasn't been Crawford. The Crawford that we know and love from the past, you know, decade. But the thing is...
But you didn't really need him to be. You have Leonard.
Let's agree to disagree, but I'm not going to say that he is a top three goaltender in this league because he's just
not. That's crazy.
He's just not yet.
That is crazy.
And
hey, let me chime in real quick. I got some stats for y'all.
Joey's sitting in here.
I was wondering, I wanted to know. So Robin Lehner this season is 27th. In goals against average.
There you go. That's a big stat. Hey,
but here's the thing. And I know Nick wants to talk so bad. And
well,
here's
I'm coming back to
support you. I'm coming back to support you because that number's not great, right? He's sitting at a 2.86, which is not great. But if you look at how bad the defense for the Blackhawks has been, you can look at his save percentage. He's posting a 9.22. Save percentage on the season. That puts him way higher. That puts him tied for 11th. So he has been an efficient goaltender so far this season. I wouldn't put him top three, but he's definitely earned himself a starting role.
Yeah, and you have to take a bit, you know, step back and think of something. How many games has Leonard kept the Hawks in, if not won the game and got one of those good old what they call a goalie win? He's kept the Hawks in so many games this year. If you don't have Robin Leonard, you don't have your 24 wins. I'd say you have 15, maybe. Maybe. How many nights has he made 35, 40 saves? And then kind of just that, you know, it's like you guys can't be surprised at this point. He is a quality goaltender. I can't believe you don't agree with me.
I never said one time that he wasn't a quality goaltender. All I said was that he is not a top two. And I like him. I think he has won many games for the Blackhawks. He has stood on his head. When you have a poor, like playing hockey and being in that world, you know what it's like to have a poor defense. Defense wins, you know, games, wins championships.
Absolutely.
Is you can have the best forwards in the world. I think we have a pretty good forward crew.
That's not the problem. No. Our forwards are deep. We're fine.
Oh yeah, no, we agree.
Yep, we agree. Look,
and that's
look
the
at
thing.
That.
Yeah, there you go. We're deep. Offensively,
absolutely.
Defensively, we struggle, and that is going to put some pressure on the goaltending. I 100% agree with that. All I'm trying to say and get my point across is that I don't know if I would give him max because he doesn't want to settle for a team's minor contract because it is a contract year. He wants to go big. He's always been playing the team favorite his whole career. He has stated that he doesn't want to do that. He's going to come out, and he's looking for a big contract. I don't know with what we still need to build around with you know, defense, and we still need some core guys at forwards because we're going to lose some guys too. But we always talk about the Brent Seabrook contract that is destroying us. It hurts. But with the money that we're going to need to spend to build a solid defense, I don't know if Leonard is worth like a max contract, if you will, in the NHL yet.
You know what? That's definitely a tough question. But let me ask you this. This time next year, who do you think is the starting goaltender for the Chicago Blackhawks?
I think that's way too hard to say because I think that the Hawks, if we don't get Leonard back, I don't think Crow is ready to go and be your full-time starter. I think he's too inconsistent.
Well, let me throw something out. Nick, I want to know because we had Leo on last week, and he brought this up. Because it is a contract year, and we're going to have to spend money in different places.
100%.
Would you rather spend money in securing Robin Lehner, or would you rather get some of the guys who we have coming up on contract, like Dylan Strome and guys like that, because you said our forwards are deep, but do you want to keep our top-caliber forwards, or do you think it's more important to build that goaltender?
Well, I think there's one thing you guys are forgetting. We don't have Seabrook's money on the cap anymore. He's on a long-term injury reserve.
Oh,
he does,
right.
But you
that's
still
right.
get his cap relief. If I'm not mistaken, the Blackhawks have a little more than $11 million to play with right now. So even if you go out and give Leonard a four-year, $7 million a year deal, you still got $5 million to play with. And Strome, I mean, Strome's had an okay year, but if you're Dylan Strome, how much are you really looking at? Maybe four or five? I mean, look at DeBrincat. He's only making, I want to say, five and a half.
Yeah, but he's on his rookie contract.
He's not. He just signed the new deal before the season started.
But he was, before.
I mean, it will be interesting, but right. I mean, if I had to take a guess, you're not gonna. You mean this time next year, it's gonna be Corey or it's gonna be Leonard. I don't see it being Corey Crawford. I could even actually seeing the Blackhawks trade Crawford at the deadline to acquire another defenseman or a prospect, couple picks, something, because you know he's gonna walk at the end of the year, I think, and go play somewhere else. And he's already made it clear that he wants to start somewhere.
And that's something that I could definitely see happening too, with Crawford leaving in that way, getting traded at the deadline, because of how much we've struggled on the end, whether it be inconsistent play or injury. So that's a point that I haven't really heard floated around too much. But I really like that if the Blackhawks wanted to make that statement, and say this is our guy, Robin Lehner is our guy, getting rid of Corey Crawford and bringing in a D-man to support him would be a great way to show him, hey, we're committed to you long term.
I don't see us committing to Crawford. I think he's going to go. I think that is solidified.
I agree.
He's done his time here.
I agree.
He was a great goaltender. But
absolutely.
If you think about the Blackhawks decade that we've had and how much success they've had with three Stanley Cups in 10 years, or, I mean, it's like 12 years now or something like that.
I think 3 in 6 years, 10, 13,
but like
15.
With, they did not have the same goaltender every single year. It was... Who was the first one? It was Niemi, and then it was Crawford, and then it was Crawford twice.
It was Crawford twice.
Was Crawford
he is
two
a
two-time
winner.
I thought there was three.
Well, there
because it was
Niemi
and Huey, maybe, and Scott Darling.
Well, he saved the Hawks that first round in 2015. You don't win the Nashville series without Scott Darling, but then Crawford came back and he was as strong as can be the last three rounds. I mean, you don't win two Stanley Cups without Corey Crawford, and I agree with you on that, Scott, that I don't see him being a Blackhawk next year. It's going to be interesting what route they take with him, but in my opinion, you don't let guys like Robin, don't just come out of nowhere, and I think they have to lock him up.
And age is a big factor. He's 28 years old compared to, 35-year-old Corey Crawford. He's 28. He's in his prime. I know a lot of people like to say that 28 to like 33 are your five prime years. So he is, from that statistic, he is entering his prime right now. If he can finish out the season and bring the Hawks to the playoffs and play just as well and play consistent throughout the rest of the year, then my mind's changed. Then I think that you need to look at him and you need to give him a contract. I don't know. Obviously, it's so early, and we still have the rest of this season to kind of have things break out because so many things are going to happen. You brought up that we're going to have a little bit over $11 million in cap space, and looking here from the 2020 to 2021 ratio or years for contracts, we're not really losing any big-name guys. 21 to 22, that's a different story. We're going to have to look at, Brandon Saad, if we're going to want to keep him again. Obviously, a lot of people are struggling with that decision, with that trade with Panarin and stuff. But those are some guys you're going to have to lock up as well. Then you're going to have to look, like I said multiple times, defensemen. So I don't know. I don't know. I think it's more if he can play well from now to the end of the season and get the Hawks to the playoffs, who I think we sit, 3 points out?
Even a wild card spot, though.
Wild card spot. And that's fine. That's what you just got to make the playoffs, In the NHL, you just got to make it. But if he can get us there, I'm all in. I'd go with Robin Lehner, too.
So you don't think he's solidified a contract for himself yet?
Not right now. Well, it depends what kind of contract. Is it a max deal? Is it a high-paying contract? Because he's not selling for the team's minimum anymore. He's getting paid $5 million for this year. I'm assuming he's going to want around 8 next year.
I was thinking 7 or 8. And like I said, if you get rid of Crawford, if you get rid of Crawford, $6 million on the books, you can make that happen. Plus the 11, like you mentioned.
Then you got to find a backup.
Yeah, well, I think there's a good chance that they actually re-signed Matt Tompkins today. There's a good chance I think him or Colin Dealer compete for the backup spot, next year. It's going to be interesting going forward, but still got 31 games left this season. I do think this is a playoff team, though.
Let me pick your brain a little bit, because we talk about players and whether players should stay, whether we should get rid of them. One of my all-time favorites, one of my brother's favorites, my dad's favorites, Duncan Keith, the assistant captain, 36 years old. We have him until 2023, 2024. Is that a guy? I think he's slowed down. Obviously, he doesn't have his quickness to foot anymore, but he still makes great reads. He's still a very consistent player. He comes into clutch moments. I think he's a player that can stay, but we are still paying him. We're going to have to pay him $5 million 21-22, $5 million 22-23, and then his contract's up. He'll be about 38 around that time. Do you think that that's a guy that we can dish out right now to maybe clear some cap space and just completely transform the defense, or do you think we keep on keep veteran players like that?
You know what, Scott, that's a great point you bring up, because as much as the back end needs improvement, that's not a guy that, in my opinion, that you go out and trade. Duncan Keiths are not, you know, defensemen that you find, like, again, another term I hate to use, it, but, you know, Duncan Keith is, people say I want to play like Duncan Keith, mm-hmm. And like you said, obviously he's a little older, he's his best years.
He can still play, though.
Yeah, his best years are behind him, yeah, but he can still play, and I don't think he's been a problem for the Hawks this year. I think he's been one of the better defensemen. So, no, to answer your question, no, I don't think you get rid of him. I think you let him kind of, you kind of let Keith decide on his own terms when he leaves Chicago, but for now I think you stick him around and you keep him around and you build defensemen around Duncan Keith until Duncan Keith's time is up in Chicago.
And I know you're a big Chicago Blackhawks Twitter guy. I know you're always following what's going on there.
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel about, or what are your thoughts on the whole pre-skate fight with Jonathan Toews and Duncan Keith?
You know what? I love it. I think it shows two guys that are bought in still, mm-hmm. that are not throwing the white flag in. I mean, I think these guys know, hey, look, we've had an up-and-down year. We're 3 points out of a playoff spot going to the break. I mean, it shows that the energy is still in the room.
It is.
These guys want to keep competing and want to keep going to war for each other every single night, which they do. They have done for the past 10 years. So I love the energy. I know it's just – and Jeremy Colleton referred to it in his pregame presser, and he said it perfectly. He said it's like having a brother. And mm-hmm. I thought of it the same way as, you know, I used to have fights with my brother who's listening right now. Hello, Frankie. We used to, you know, we play sports and we get into it, but guess what? We are best friends and brothers 5 minutes later.
Of course.
But it's just too.
I'm sure you guys played like shinny hockey together.
Exactly.
Me and my brother used to play full check shinny hockey.
And things got pretty wild in that basement.
We used to smoke each other.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you threw a couple punches and everything, but guess what? 5 minutes, 10 minutes later, you were eating dinner together, laughing it off.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, my brother and I we even still play shinny hockey when he's home. Shout out Rocco, he's watching right now, and my family, mom and dad. But he's playing. He always wants to play shinny hockey with me when he's home. He's on his high school's JV hockey team, so hockey's just in his blood. He wants to play, and we're playing shinny. He just loves like being competitive with me. But it's kind of like that being brothers. Like you're gonna butt heads, you're gonna fight, but you know at the end of the day, you're brothers. You know it's gonna happen.
Well, I think a lot of people freak out because they see the word fight on Twitter, and they're all circling like, oh my god,
yes,
there's a problem in the locker rooms. What's going on? And it's really not like that in hockey. And they're both captains. These guys have been playing together for years, for a decade. They have been together for. And the thing is, I think it was more of let's make a statement. Let's get that fire going.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
And I think that's exactly what it was. And I know a lot of people are jumping to the gates right away, like, oh, it's because Toews is having problems in the locker room. I don't think that's what it is at all. I think those core guys know what it takes. They've been to 3 Stanley Cups. They've won 3 Stanley Cups. They know what it takes to get there. And they know right around this season time, right around mid-January, early February, this is go time.
This is
playoff push time. You got the All-Star break coming up. They're ready to go.
Yeah. And Scott, I agree with you. I think if you see two guys at practice, I'm not saying you need to get in fights to show that you're still in this thing, but
it's electrifying.
It is. And in, practice, like I said, they may be scuffling at 12 o'clock in the afternoon during morning skate or 11 a.m. whatever it is. But guess what? Come 7:30 that night at the UC, they're gonna go to war for each other.
Oh yeah. And we've seen them fight for each other time.
And they're gonna break someone else's head for each other. So I wouldn't think anything of it besides two guys that love each other and are bought in.
Yeah, I think they're going to come ready to play. I mean, you just look at the Madhouse on Madison. Everyone loves coming to that place. Jim Corneliusson singing the national anthem.
Man.
He gets that place. He gets that place rocking.
I think that might be one of the best national anthems in all sports.
Yeah.
And I know that's some biasness.
Oh, no.
But
yeah,
it is.
Agreed.
If you're
He's
in
really
that
good.
Arena and you yes. hear that, that is one of the most electrifying things I've ever heard.
People don't understand it until you go there. It's just you get chills and everything else. And, I know we're running out of time here, but real quick, I want to touch on Patrick Kane. He just hit his 1,000 point.
Oh, that's right.
Another
1,000.
Yeah, crazy. 1,000. Just got 1,001 the other night.
Got that assist.
With his third, actually, it was a third period goal to make it 4-3 versus the Panthers.
And he's 31 years old. He's got 1,000 points at 31. He's so good and so fluent, he is going to play until he's about like 36, 37.
I could see him going until 40, but
really?
This is going to be another hot take for you. But
uh-oh.
I think if he has not already put himself down as the best American player.
Oh no,
ever.
I 100% agree.
When it's all said and done, yeah, absolutely. And when it's all said and done, I don't think there will be any question. If there is a question now, I don't think there is. I mean, he's already got 1,001 points. I mean, the leader among not active, but NHL players in history. I think it's like 1,461. Think about that. So that means he only needs 461 more points in the rest of his, you know, if he could play another 6-7 years.
I think that he has solidified himself as definitely the best player, like best hands. He's got the best hands in the NHL.
He's a very good stick handler.
Auston Matthews is also American. Auston Matthews is also very young and unproven. But Auston Matthews, I think, is going to be a very solidified American player.
I agree.
But Patrick Kane takes the cake.
Yeah, you know, you got to look at the resume, too, with all the awards. And, yeah, 1,000 point, remarkable stat. Kane will be playing his 9th All-Star game on Saturday.
Yep, in St. Louis.
What a feat that is. Boo, Blues. No, we have some Blues some Blues fans, but what a year they're having, right?
Yeah, they are. I could just remember when Patrick Kane had that stick handling video that came out. I think it was like he was at center ice and he had a bunch of hockey pucks just scattered around and he's stick handling them, not even touching one, just going around like it's nothing.
Well, I feel like we grew up with Patrick Kane.
We did.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Like think of all the faces that we saw him go through. After the first 2010 Stanley Cup, he was going to Wisconsin University and he was drinking with Adam Burrish and you know, partying. And then he was doing, you know, 2013. It's crazy to think that we have literally grown up watching these players and he's only 31 years old.
Yeah. And it's crazy because these are the guys that, you know, in not a few years, but like 5-10 years, we're going to be telling our kids, like, we watch Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves and Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook.
Yeah, like
and
the Bobby Crawford Hull and Sam McKeith of, like, our decade.
Yeah, and it's remarkable, and it's kind of sad that their best years are behind them.
I tell you what, but he's still 31. The best years as a team are behind them. I think they can still play. I think he's still in his prime. But the thing is, I hope that I am in a spot in my life where I can afford tickets to go watch when their jerseys are hung up in the banner.
That'll be a night. All I know is that the other night when I watched that 1,000 point ceremony, I swear one of my roommates was cutting onions and I couldn't figure out who it was. But I mean, what a ceremony that was! And Scott, you hit it perfectly. I mean, we grew up watching Kane. I mean,
it's crazy.
It is.
It's crazy.
Well, we do have to take a quick break. Got us. Had a nice talk about some Chicago Blackhawks. We're going to take a break, though, and when we come back, it's going to be the 3-up, 3-down here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Going up, coming down.
It's the 3-up, 3-down.
3-up, 3-down.
Only on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. It is time for the 3-up, 3-down. For those of you that don't know how it works, we pick men's college basketball games. We have to pick 3 favorites to win and 3 underdogs, as according to ESPN's matchup predictor. One of the favorites, or only one of the favorites, can be over 80%, and at least one has to be a Missouri Valley game. We take a look at the standings, though, after the first week. Let's see, at the bottom of the pile is the guest with, 0 wins. They went 0-6. Tough week for the guest. Then it is Scott Rizala, 2-4.
You always got to come from the bottom.
Check it out, though. I'm pretty sure last week I heard the words out of Scott Rizala's mouth. I'm pretty sure I heard guaranteed 6-0. Was he actually, Freddie?
He was 2-4.
And that doesn't sound like a 6-0 to me.
It's not. It was tough.
Next up is me. I was 3-3. And then at the top of the leaderboard, Joey and Steve, our faculty advisor, Steve Cease, they are 4-2 after week one.
Steve's a heck of a competitor, but Steve, if you're listening, it's time for me to pull away.
We'll have to see.
I got to make my own path.
We'll have to see what happens this week. My first pick, we'll start with the ups. I'm going for the Valley. First off, I'm going to go UNI over Loyola. UNI, 71.1% favorite.
I'm going to have to give my up as well. It's my 84.8%. I have Houston over UConn.
I'm going to start with my first up. I got a buddy who goes to Indiana, and so I'm going to pick against them. Michigan State's going to go in there, and they're going to tear them apart. So that should be a good one. I'm picking Michigan State.
Well, Joey started 0-1.
My first favorite, I'm going to go with Louisville over Clemson.
Alrighty, our faculty advisor Steve Sees, he is going North Alabama over Kennesaw State, 74.7% on ESPN's predictor. Alright, my second game, it is my over 80% game, Oregon over UCLA, Oregon 95.1% to win. So hopefully they can pull this one out.
My next game is going to be a down game. I'm going to have Drake over Indiana State. That's my Missouri Valley game. That is at 33%.
I'm going to go with my second up. I'm also picking Oregon, but not over UCLA Ferretti. This is also my over 80 game. 87.1% over USC. They're playing at home. Oregon is a threat this year, and I think it'll be a cakewalk for them.
My second favorite game comes in the Big Ten. It's not too much of a big difference. Maryland's favorite at 55%, but I am going to take Maryland over Indiana.
And our faculty advisor, Steve, sees his second game. He's got Liberty over North Florida, 73.8%. My final up game is Furman over the Citadel, 78.5%.
Wow. We'd like to apologize for anyone who's in our military for Freddie picking against the Citadel.
You know what? This is where my picks kind of get fun. Because I like taking like really big underdogs, and that's probably why I'm 2-4. But I have Washington State over Colorado. That game is at 10.7%.
And you're picking?
And I'm picking Washington State.
That's big.
Jeez,
you
okay.
Really get something going with that.
All right, Scott. You don't get any extra points for being dumb. Next, my last up, I'm going to go Texas Tech over the University of Kentucky. That is at a solid 70%. Texas Tech has been really good. I think that game will be close, but I think Tech has got it.
And my last up is going to go in the Missouri Valley Conference. I'm going to take Bradley over Indiana State. Bradley is, you know, predicted to beat Indiana State, so I'm going to go with it. And hopefully Bradley Braves, there we go,
yep,
can pull out a win for me.
I didn't know where you were going. I was trying to help you.
Final up pick for our faculty advisor, Steve Cease. He's going Gonzaga. Go Zags over Pacific, 97.6%. Now we'll go to the downs. My first down pick, Kent State over Buffalo, 46.2%.
I'm going to give you guys my next up pick, 70%. That's Texas Tech over UK.
Hey, that's a good pick.
And,
that's
like
a good
that
pick.
Pick.
No complaints about that one.
Okay. Because I was waiting for you. I was waiting for your reply.
All right, my first down is going to be Wisconsin. They're heading into Purdue. Purdue, blech. There are 37.2% chance of winning, but I really like Wisconsin. I don't know why they're so low against Purdue, but I think it'll be. I think this is going
like
to surprise a lot
like
of people.
My first upset is going to come in the Big Ten again. You know, it's actually a game tonight. I'm going to take Indiana over Michigan State.
Okay.
So Michigan State is favored at almost 70%. But I don't know. I just feel like Indiana's going to pull this one out, hopefully.
Indiana's a good basketball school.
Yeah.
Steve sees his first down pick. It is Idaho State and Montana. Idaho State is a 52.2% favorite, but Steve is picking Montana. And going off your thing, Joey, for Purdue, shout out to Evan Bedreau. Man, I went to school with on the Purdue basketball team. And a shout out, happy birthday to him as well. So he's having a pretty good season.
Okay.
Alrighty, my second down pick, Utah over the Washington Huskies, 47.8%.
Now there's going to be some biasness that comes into this pick. You guys know how I love my California schools, even though...
Scotty loves California.
I love California.
UCLA.
For anybody who doesn't know, Scotty's been rocking frosted tips because he just wants to go out there and look like he's
beach blonde. I
want to go
out there so bad.
Yeah, I think it's Justin Timberlake in here or something.
Exactly.
There you go. I mean, you got to do what you got to do. So I'm going to have, this is another big one, 12.9%. This is going to close out my down games. I have USC over Oregon.
Scott.
Woo!
There you go.
Scott.
And you know what? It's a Pac-12 game.
Scott,
those games are always exciting.
Scott,
and USC.
I genuinely feel bad for you.
I do too.
I genuinely feel bad for you because we're going to come to the end of the 3 up, 3 down, and it's going to be like me on top, Ferretti one under me, Steve Cease one under me, and then you and the guest are going to be below 500, and that's going to be tough for you.
You've got to pick fun games, though. Like, we're picking games that no one's going to watch. These are games people are going to watch, and it's going to be a big upset.
You know what? Here's a game that people are going to watch.
Let's hear it.
I got 41.1% Wofford at Western Carolina. That is a classic barn burner right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Wofford is going to clean house with that one. Their dogs... But they're gonna for the eight people watching on ESPN Plus, it's gonna be a thriller.
My second upset game is gonna come. Actually, it's gonna be our only top 25 game on Friday night. It's gonna feature 13 Butler and Marquette, and I'm gonna go with Marquette taking the upset over 13 Butler. Both teams are almost identical records. Marquette 14-5, Butler 15-4. But I got Marquette beating Butler.
Back with the advisor, Steve Cease. Next game, he's got Illinois State, Southern Illinois. He is a diehard Redbird fan, but the way they're going, oh boy, like Mary Poppins would say, it's quite atrocious. He's taking Southern Illinois.
For Eddie. I felt that one from over here.
Sheesh.
My final down game, this is a pretty bold one. U of I over Michigan. Michigan has a 66% chance of winning that game. I think U of I might be able to pull that one out.
I'm actually not mad at that pick.
I'm a little mad because it's U of I, but
think it's smart. I think it's smart. I think Ferretti's playing the game.
All right. Well, you know I'm playing the game too. I have a pretty solid pick here. It's Wright State. It's my last
Scott's
pick.
Scott's coming out. And favored at 6%.
This is my last up pick. 60. You're close. 61.6%.
Okay.
Wright State over Northern Kentucky. And that's going to be my 6-0 weekend right there.
Wow. My favorite thing about the 3-up, 3-down is finding all these Who Cares games because they're so funny. But my last one is not a Who Cares game. It's actually my Valley game. I've got Drake going into Indiana State. Only favored 33%, but I think they're going to win. Drake, a pretty good basketball school in years past. I can't trust the Sycamores. There's only room in this conference for one ISU, and so I think Drake's going to go in there and do what they got to do.
So I know we just talked about the Illini, but I want to touch on them real quick. I feel like Illinois gets no respect. I know we're supposed to hate the Illini.
Because we're Illinois State.
No, not just from us. I mean just in general. I mean, they're playing some of their best basketball in years. So that I'm going to take – I obviously already had this picked, but I'm going to take Illinois with the upset. Somehow, they're Michigan is –
They're ranked,
picked.
And they're good this year.
Yeah, but Michigan does have the almost 60% favorite over them on Saturday morning. So I'm going to take the Illini over Michigan. And I actually think the Illini are going to compete for the Big Ten this season. I mean, they're playing great basketball under Brad Underwood.
We've got some pretty exciting picks. And Steve's last pick, he is taking Florida State over defending national champion Virginia. That will just about round it out for this week's edition of The Red Zone. A big thank you to our news and sports guests, Nick and Power, for being on the show and talking about the Hawks as they head into the All-Star break. Also, a big thank you to Kate Delfava for coming in and talking about her future plans with the Utah Royals. So best of luck to her. If you miss any portion of tonight's show, the entire podcast will be available online shortly at WZND.com. Don't forget to head to @WZND Sports on Twitter and take part in our weekly poll. And make sure to tune in to Redbird Women's Basketball tomorrow as they take on the Drake Bulldogs. Coverage will begin at 6:50 here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. Once again, that will just about do it for Scott Rosala and Joey Dwyer. I am Anthony Ferretti. You've been listening to The Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the Pulse of Redbird Nation.